Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book and get time to review it, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to listen to. Now, it has been, let me just check, over a month since the last podcast that I put out here, and that is because I have been very, very busy with different things. When I last reviewed a book, I can't remember, it was about, like I say, a month ago, and then I had a very busy week getting ready for a trip over to California and Portland in Oregon, so that was a two-week trip away, and I thought that while I was going to be gone, I would get a chance to review the book that I'm going to review today, which is by Clifford D. Simic, Why Call Them Back from Heaven, but that was 2 weeks of vacationing. Normally, when I go away on a work trip, I work on cruise ships or work at festivals or do things like that, and I often have times when I'm waiting around and sitting around and just hanging out as other people get on with their vacation and I'm there to work. Whereas this time it was my vacation, so it was a fantastic trip away. Performed at the Portland Juggling Festival, and then after that I went down to San Francisco after hanging out in Portland for a while. I went down to San Francisco for a few days and then over to Yosemite, the Yosemite Valley for 3 days, where I did lots of hiking, and the weather was really bad, which was great because that meant there was nobody there for 2 days, and I was like walking for hours and hours with nobody else around. I had an encounter with a bear, which was quite fun, a bear coming into it. If you want to see all the photos from my San Francisco trip and Yosemite and all that kind of stuff, check out my blog, lukeburridge.com/blog. You can find all my recent posts there and lots of photographs and lots of things and stories of my adventures in my trip to America, which is great. And then I came back and, of course, catching up with my girlfriend, hanging out there, and I'm working on a new show. So I've a friend has come round and we're working hours and hours a day on this new show. And it's just the time just to get ready, you know, because to do one of these podcasts, I need at least an hour of uninterrupted time. And this, and I'm not kidding, this is the first hour of uninterrupted time that I've had for around about 3 weeks. So I'm going to get to it. I've actually, in that time, though, I have read completed three of the books. I've almost finished a fourth one. One of them was a non-fiction book called Public Parts by Jeff Jarvis, which I listened to as an audiobook. He narrates it as well. It's a nonfiction book about living life in public and sharing lots of stuff. And I can really get behind the message in that book. So check that out if you're interested. I did a review of that on goodreads.com. So check out goodreads.com/Luke Burridge. You'll be able to find the review there. I've finished... what was the other book that I finished? Oh, The Mote in God's Eye by Larry Niven and Joe Parnell. I read that for the read-along for the SFF audio podcast. I'll be reviewing that next. And I've almost finished another book. What was the other book that I read? I can't remember now. And then another one, which is about Spellwright by somebody. I can't remember his name. I'll get onto those later. But today, let me get onto today's review. It's called Why Call Them Back from Heaven by Clifford D. Simak. And I have one of his books upstairs, actually, which is called something to do with time, something. I can't remember what it's called now. Something to do with time. And it's been sitting there beside my bed, and I think, yeah, I'll get to it. But it's one of these small books. You know, Clifford D. Simak was writing in, like, I guess, the 1950s and 60s, and put out loads and loads of books. I've read a few books of his before, and I've always quite enjoyed them. But then I was on a cruise ship, and they have, in the library on the cruise ship, they have a paperback exchange. So you can leave a book there and pick up a book. So I can't remember which book I left. But I left a book, and I picked up this book called Why Call Them Back from Heaven. And I'd not heard of it before. I guess it's not a very well-known book of his. It's out of print now, so you'll only be able to find it as sort of like a second-hand shop or as a paperback. Maybe, I'm sure there'll be a few copies on Amazon. Actually, I have the Amazon page out here. So, yes, there are 2 new copies and 35 used copies. And it cost 29 cents to get a used copy of this book from Amazon.com. So if you're getting an order from Amazon.com and you don't mind paying the postage, seriously, just pick this up. You can get it for $3, 87 cents, 29 cents, or... There's a new version, actually. It says they're from $56. I'm not sure if you need a new version of this book for $56. But yeah, it's worth reading. As you can tell, I read this... Oh, let me just go into the information here. I've got it on goodreads.com page open here. So, 192 pages, published in 1967. Interesting stuff. Now, It's a bit strange for me to do this review because it says here on the Goodreads.com status that I read this from the 10th of September to the 18th of September, and it's now the 19th of October. So I finished this book over a month ago. So I can't remember all of the different details, but it is a bit it's interesting for me to think about this book or to do the book now, because there's lots of things in this book which really stuck with me in a way that I wasn't expecting when I was reading it. Because as I was reading it, I was thinking, oh, this is interesting. Oh, this is good. Oh, yeah, whatever, like that. And then once I'd actually gone back and I'd sort of let it bounce around in my brain, and I was thinking, oh, what am I going to do when I do this review? What am I going to talk about? What characters will I talk about? And I can't actually remember many of the characters' names. The main character is called Dan Frost. And let me just set up the world. In fact, let me do this. I'm going to set up the world, and then I'm going to talk about the themes that it really brought out, and then I'll go into some different other parts of it about the writing. So it's set around about 200 years in the future from when it was written. So I guess mid 20th century. It's like mid 22nd century or 23rd century or something like that. So it's a few hundred years in the future. And the main sort of like what if kind of premise of this book is like, what if in the future a company decided to start offering immortality? So this Forever Company, a few hundred years before the book is set, so like in, you know, maybe round about now, you know, maybe in the year 2010, this company sets up and said, hey, we are going to, for a price, offer you immortality. We don't have any way to offer you immortality yet, but in the future, we will have all of the technology sorted out. We'd have worked out all the medical problems. We'll be able to cure cancer. We'll be able to cure this. We'll be able to cure that. There'll be no disease that we can't cure. We'll be able to make your body perfect. However, we can't do that yet. But what we can do is when you die, we will freeze your body. And then in the future, you'll just have to trust us to take your money now, and we will invest your money. And when we invest your money, we'll get that, you know, we'll get the profits from your money, we'll get the return on your money, and we'll then invest that into cures for medical treatment. So we'll bring you back to life. As soon as you die, we'll bring you back to life. We'll heal you. And then that's it. Now, this idea has been done in science fiction a few times before. You know, there's lots of times it's like, oh, we'll freeze you now, and then when you wake up, we'll sort you out, and you'll live forever. And normally the book is about that, whereas this book is about what happens if it takes a bit longer than the Forever Company thinks. So they think, oh, well, maybe in 50 years' time, we'll have got all the people together. You know, we'll wake up all the frozen people, and we'll heal them and put them right, and then they'll live forever. And they've saved up their money, and the money that we've invested, we'll give them the money back that they've invested in the company, and they'll be set for their new immortal life. But it doesn't just take 50 years. In fact, it takes more than that, to the point where in the year 2250... they're still freezing people, but the Forever Company still hasn't worked out how to, when they bring someone back to life, how they're going to heal everyone. So they're not bringing anybody back to life now. So what's happening is that everybody in the world is just saving up money. They're not spending any money. Nobody's spending any money on their current life because they know that they're going to be immortal. Oh, also, this is a big thing. It becomes sort of like a social program that everybody in the world, or at least in America, everybody is then, they said, well, why is it only the rich people can afford to live forever? So the government says, okay, everybody has to be frozen upon death, and nobody cannot be frozen upon death. It's a basic human right. Immortality is a human right, even though immortality doesn't exist yet. But they say immortality is a basic human right. So everybody is being frozen. Everybody. And so everybody is saving up lots of money, knowing that when they next wake up, when they die, and then when they next come back to life, they will be they'll be around forever, and they need to set themselves up because everybody will be being brought back to life at the same time, and they have to have a leg up in the world. They have to have a foot up in the world. So they save their money now to spend in their immortal life later. Yeah, sounds good. That sounds good. So fast forwarding now to 2250 kind of stuff, when the action is set here, Everybody is like, nobody's spending any money. So all of society is, all they're doing is working for the Forever Company. The Forever Company is taking everybody's money. They're becoming, they are by far the most powerful corporation in the world, the most powerful power in the world. They're more powerful than any of the governments because they are looking after all of these people. And they've got these massive skyscraper towers, which are just nothing but coffins, tombs for these people who are dead, and they get frozen, they get put inside, and nobody lives in the country anymore because technology has moved on to the point where you don't need to grow any food, and we can just they just get the food by synthesizing the foods. So they don't need to worry about that. So everyone is concentrating deeper and deeper into the city. So everyone just moves into New York and into a few cities around the edges of the United States, and nobody lives in the center. So everything is getting deserted. Everything's turning back to nature. There's no cultural adventures or anything like that. Everybody just sits inside and watches TV because TV is free. And nobody goes out for food because it costs too much to go out for food. Everyone just eats at home and everyone eats very simple food. And even though it's like somebody who's working at the top end of the Forever Company, even like the executives in the Forever Company, they're going, well, I can't afford to go out for food tonight. I can't afford to do this. And when nobody goes out for food, that means all the restaurants close down. So it's not even an option anymore. So we get this really dystopian or pre-utopian kind of society where everything is closing down. Commerce is closing down, culture is closing down, and almost, for this book, most importantly, religion is closing down. If you can live forever by technological means, what is the point of trying to be spiritual and trying to please a god when your reward of eternal life, every time you die, they'll just freeze your body and fix you again and wake you back up again in this life? What is the point of living for a religion which the reward is eternal life when you can get eternal life here? And this is one of the main themes of this book. It's a very kind of spiritual, religious kind of book. So that is the world that it's set in. So to talk, I can't remember all of the details in the story. Of course, there is some kind of conspiracy. It's like, well, is the Forever Company really doing what they say? Are they really freezing everyone? Are they really going to bring everyone back to life? Are they, are they the benefiters of all humanity, or are they not going to bring some people back? And are they gonna, with the people that they like, different conspiracies that you can see. I mean, I'm not spoiling anything. Right from the very beginning, this is what's going on. And there are two characters that I want to talk about. There's more characters than that, but two characters that I want to talk about now. One of them is called Dan Frost, and he is our protagonist here in the novel. We follow him most of the way through. But then there is another one. Let me just have a check here. And then there's another guy. Is it Franklin Chapman, who is the other character? So Dan, let me start with Franklin Chapman. He is an ambulance driver, and the way it works is that if you need to get somewhere, like anyone who dies, everyone's got this tracker implanted in their heart. So as soon as their heart stops, an ambulance rushes out to where they are, or an air ambulance rushes out to where they are, freezes them and takes them back and puts them in one of these big coffin towers. And so if the ambulance driver or this rescue driver doesn't get there in time, he is treated in this case as a murderer, because it is your human right not just to not have someone kill you, but when you die, someone has to go and pick you up and save your immortal life, even if they don't save your current mortal life. So he is an ambulance driver, and in the first chapter we see that he is tried, and his punishment is that because he took away somebody's immortal life, he now has his immortal life taken away from him. So they say, okay, you can still live, you're still free, we're not going to send you to jail or anything like that. Your punishment is that you only have the life that you have now, and because you denied someone their immortal life, eye for an eye, you're not going to get your immortal life. So he then has to he goes about his own life. He does the same job, he does everything. Oh no, he gets fired from his job, and he is kind of ostracized from the community, but not in a full way, because everyone realizes that he is being punished. Now Daniel Frost, our protagonist, is an executive with a forever company, and he has a job to help cover up some things and to get good press and things. But then there's some double crossing within the company, and he is tried. To be honest, I can't even remember what he did wrong, but it was sort of like a setup job, so he didn't really do anything wrong. But the way that the trial went, this secret trial, and his punishment is the opposite of Franklin's. Franklin Chapman. Franklin Chapman, is his punishment was to no longer have any immortal life. Whereas Dan Frost's punishment is that they say, okay, we're going to tattoo this thing on your face, and nobody is allowed to give you food, nobody is allowed to give you shelter, nobody is allowed to help you in any way, nobody is allowed to talk to you, nobody is allowed to interact with you, you no longer have your apartment, you no longer have any possessions, none of your friends can talk to you or anything like that. However, you can still have immortal life if you want it. So his punishment is that he no longer has immortal life, but he does have... No, he no longer has his mortal life to live, but he does have his immortal life if he wants it. Although when he is brought back from the dead, he doesn't have any possessions. He doesn't have any worldly goods. He'll just be coming back as like as a freshly immortalized person. So when he has this punishment, everyone normally who has this punishment, it's just expected that they will just go into one of the suicide centers and say, okay, I don't want to live anymore now. I just want to be put under and bring me back once immortality is available and, you know, immortal youth is available. So everyone just expects him to do that, or the people who set him up expect him to do that. But he's like, no, I will not do this thing. I will live now. I want to save my mortal life, maybe at the cost of my immortal life, but I want to reestablish my name. I want to get to the bottom of this these conspiracies within the Forever Company and all that kind of stuff. So the book plays out as an examination of these different approaches to philosophy, like spiritual or religious kind of way of living. And this is why I want to get straight onto the themes here, because there is some major themes, and that's what this book is about. Like, everybody in the book no longer has a spiritual religion, they no longer have a spiritual faith or a religious faith, but they do have a technological faith. And which contrasts exactly with sort of like the Catholic Church view, or maybe the like the Islamic view, where the life that you have now is nothing but a precursor to an immortal life, and you've got to make sure that you have an immortal life in heaven or in paradise, not in Hades or hell or any of these other places that you don't want to go to. You want to go to the paradise. So you have to work all your life to make sure that your eternal life is a paradise life rather than a hell life. You want to make it a utopian immortality rather than a dystopian mortality. So that's what everybody is doing in this world. What do I have to do? I have to give all my money to the church. I mean, the Forever Center. What do I have to do? I have to save up all my blessings for, you know, my spiritual life in heaven. Oh, I mean my immortal life on earth once I'm resurrected by the Forever Center. And so that's what you get in this book. Some people are just putting everything away, and some people are living life. So what happens with Franklin Chapman is that he no longer has an immortal future anymore. He becomes as though maybe like... like Buddhists are going to be reincarnated, or is it Hindus are going to be reincarnated, or whatever. You know, some Buddhists think about reincarnation, Hindus go for reincarnation, the Abrahamic religions go for living in paradise. But what are the religions which don't have an afterlife? I'm sure there are some, but, you know, maybe you just think, okay, well, I'm an atheist. I'm not going to live for an afterlife. I'm going to live for this life. And immediately what happens is that Franklin Chapman, he goes, well, I'm going to spend more time with my family. And he does. And all the money that I put away to live forever for my next life, all of the money that I've been spending on the Church of the Forever Center, the Church of Immortality, even though it's a technological kind of immortality, I'm going to now spend that on myself, and I'm going to help my family, and I'm going to hang out with my friends. And everyone looks at him as though, oh, like that. So immediately, when he's no longer living his whole entire life as a service towards immortality into the next life, he lives a better life. And in the same way that that our Dan Frost, our lead character, he no longer lives. He's no longer living for immortality. He doesn't care. I mean, he cares that he's going to be immortal or not, but he doesn't care if he goes to Hades or to hell or if he goes to heaven. All he cares about is if he, the only thing that matters to him is his life now. He wants to get to the bottom of life now. He wants to make the most of his life now. He wants to make a difference to the world in as he can now, totally outside of society. He wants to impact society from the outside. So he becomes, these two voices become sort of like the voice in the wilderness going, whoa, is that, that everyone is doing something wrong? You need to listen to me. Even though nobody can listen to any of these, either of these two people. They've all got, the rest of society has got their own way of living their own life. And of course, some people do come round to Dan Frost's point of view and do help him out and sort of do live a life which is because he's now a charity case, although he's like an illegal charity case, whereas some people do have compassion for him, which really shows up sort of like the religious charity kind of idea, that like the sort of the weird hypocrisy that you can get in some religious charities. Of course, some religious like church-based charities, they really do help the poor and do help the sick, and it really is a charity kind of thing. Whereas a lot of charities, it's sort of like, yeah, it's a Christian charity. What do you do? Well, we give Bibles to people who are needy. It's like, well, a Bible's really what you need? Is that really what's going on? Or do people need food? Or do they need jobs? Or do they need security? Or do they not need to be at the mercy of armies and the Lord's Resistant Army and so all that kind of things. Like, what kind of charity do people really need? You should be giving them that. Maybe you need to give them food rather than spiritual food. Give us this day our daily bread. Well, maybe we need bread made out of bread rather than made out of prayers and Bible studies and singing nice songs, stuff like that. So there's lots of examination of that going on here. And that's what I really enjoyed about this book, is that it is a book about faith in the future, faith in a higher power, faith in that your way of life is going to lead to immortality. Because, of course, one of the conspiracy theories that is investigated in this book, I'm not going to say if it's true or not, because there's various different conspiracies about the Forever Center. It's like, will immortality ever work? Will there be, when we bring everyone back from the dead, will there be enough space for everyone on Earth? Are we going to have to go into space? Are we going to have to find more, are we going to have to like bring some people back and then, find in another time, bring some other people back? And then, and there's all these different kinds of places and different questions. Like, is the immortality even going to work? We've been waiting 150, 200 years and it's still not worked. Is it ever going to work? So the faith is a real leap of faith. And I don't think I've really seen an exploration of faith as a spiritual concept or as a religious concept taken away from the religious point of view as well, and put into like a technological science fictional kind of view better than this book has done it. And that's what really impressed me about this book, that it's an exploration of faith, not an exploration of technology or society. It's an exploration of religion and about how to live your life compared to when there's an afterlife. Because often in science fiction, there is an afterlife, whereas this is an ambiguous promise of an afterlife. So that includes faith. Normally, it's a bit cut and dry. There is an afterlife, there isn't an afterlife. And here, it's a question. You can be agnostic about the afterlife within this book, and some people are, and some people aren't. There are some other characters in the book. There's a quite interesting, was it Anne Harrison? I just opened the book here at random and found her name. So Anne Harrison is a lawyer who first of all represents Franklin Chapman at the beginning of the book, and she is also befriends Daniel Frost because he's looking into this issue, and of course there's some kind of relationship there as well. And I always find it a bit strange in these books how two people meet, and because it's the main character and it's like the first female character he meets, they sort of fall in love. Whereas I actually found this quite convincing here. They meet up and they talk a bit and then they go on a date, and it's not suddenly like, oh, and then we just fall in love. There is a little bit more to it than that. They see need in each other. They see something in each other that they don't see in other people. And for once, I actually saw in both of these people what each other saw in them. And in a world where there is you know, in this dystopian or pre-utopian world where everything is being ground into the ground, these two people sort of stand up. These are the two people who really sort of stand up against the system. So when they find each other, there is sort of like something in common there. That, so I understand where the attraction is. Other characters in the book. To get some of the writing style, this is a very short book. For the story that it tells in 190 pages, it gets through a lot of material here. And it's not because he's not saying anything. He's actually, I think he could have taken longer to say a lot of it. But the way that it's written is very brisk. It's very concise, very to the point. And actually, I just saw a review on Amazon.com that says exactly the same thing, which they also says... its terseness comes from conciseness, not paucity of ideas. And that is true. And what I really liked is all the little bits where he goes away and there's a little bit of a, like he goes away and just finds these other characters who are living in the, he goes, "You see," said the little old lady, "we're both getting old. It isn't as if we had a lot of years ahead of us, although our health is good, you know." And it's just a little thing of, you know, a little vignette. It's like maybe 200 words long. This chapter 5 here is one page long, and it's just about two old people just going in and, you know, going into one of these suicide centers and deciding, oh, he goes, like, we put ourselves away, and the money that is left over goes into earning interest instead of just sitting around and eating into it. So they're saying, like, we've got some money now, so instead of, you know, using that money to feed us now, we'll use that money to feed us in our next life. You know, saving up in heaven or whatever they say? Saving up your blessings in heaven. And so instead of going away and going, okay, I'll just explain. What we do in this world, you know, it's not like two characters explaining to each other. It's like, okay, in this world, what we do is when you're old and you don't want to live anymore and you want to put yourself away, so, you know, there's no worries about nobody coming to pick you up or dying and your heart monitor not working, doing any of that. So just come along to one of these suicide centers. You know, it's not one person explaining to the other. It's two people going through this, an old lady and an old gentleman going into one of these centers and going, yep, you know, and the mortician rubbed his soft, flabby hands together. "I quite understand," he said. "There's no need of you to feel embarrassed. People with your problem come in all the time, you know." And it's just, it's like a little conversation, a little vignette, which builds the world and builds the theme and builds the, you know, what the old people do in this situation. Oh, they do that. Well, it also explains what the mortician's job is and things. You know, the mortician isn't someone who looks after dead people after they've died. It's the person who kills people as a mortician. And there's two characters. One of them is, he's actually someone who's trying to be spiritual, and he's become a hermit. So he's gone away and he's got this cross, and he's living on this sandbank in the middle of a river. And he's got this cross, and he's trying to make this cross stand upright in the sand. But every time he wakes up in the morning, the sand has shifted and the cross has fallen over again. So he's got like this Sisyphean task to continuously put this cross into the ground and stand it up. So every day, all he does is dig a hole, put the cross in the hole standing upright, and then fill the cross in. And he's trying to sort of find spiritual validation, trying to find spiritual meaning in this almost meaningless task, this hermit-like, well, no, what was it, not like, maybe not hermit-like, what am I trying to say? Like this task that he just does over and over again. And when it doesn't work, you know, he tries to find other ways to punish himself, or does he need to pray more? Does he need to eat less, to do more fasting, to do this thing? And his journey is really funny. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's this other guy who's found out about this treasure, this buried treasure. And he knows that this treasure has been buried along the banks of this river somewhere, but the river keeps changing course all the time. So he is looking for this buried treasure, these little bits of emerald, these carved emeralds. And, you know, no, treasure isn't really important. You know, gold isn't expensive, you know, because you can just synthesize gold and diamonds. You can just make diamonds and stuff. These are these hand-carved works of art. And he's like, these will be the thing. I'll find these. Everybody now knows they're stolen, but I'll when I go and die and when I put myself under, what I'll do is I'll have these, and then when I wake up in a few hundred years' time, nobody will care about the these carved bits of emeralds anymore. I'll just be able to you know, use these, and this will be my reward in heaven, these bits. So I know they're stolen, but if I find them and I take them through, nobody will care in the future, and they'll be mine, and I can use them to pay for my immortal life. And he's also going along and looking for these emeralds. And of course, he's looking for the emeralds on this bank. And I could sort of see it coming as I was reading this. I was like, oh, wait a second. And then later on, our protagonist goes and finds himself walking up a river. And I'm like, okay, so I know there's these guys looking for this emerald. And I know this is this other guy who's on this sandbank. And I was wondering, okay, where are these people going to intersect? Where are their storylines going to intersect? And slight spoiler here. Is that the guy who is looking for the diamonds has a spiritual experience. I'm not going to give away what happens there. And then, not the diamonds, the guy who's looking for the emeralds has a spiritual experience. And the guy who's looking for a spiritual experience, I'll just say it, he finds the emeralds and then it's really funny how those two kind of swap places, that you don't really know what you're looking for in life until you find it. And these two guys didn't know what they were looking for in life. And of course, they both come across, Dan Frost, he finds, let me just say, the twisting storylines, you think these are just little vignettes like chapter 5, where you just got these two old people going in. When we first meet the guy who's looking for the emerald, you think, oh, well, you know, he's looking, it's just a thing to show what crime could be like. You know, if you do your crime and you're not caught, you just do your crime and then go and kill yourself or go into one of these suicide centers. I thought it was just a little thing like that, you know, just playing in society like some of the others were. But then it comes back round, and these characters do play a bigger part in the story. Again, I'm not going to give away what happens at the end. It is quite an ambiguous ending, because it leaves you still with this, you know, some questions are answered, some of the conspiracy theories are either confirmed or denied, but there is still this ambiguity. Does immortality exist? Does it really exist? Is anyone really going to get immortal? Because we end before the bringing people back to life and creating their immortal lives, them actually exists. We don't see that in the future. The story is very interesting. That, like I say, the writing style is well done. The characters are actually impressively well. From what I remember, I mean, I do remember some of the characters, but they are very sort of like 1960s short paperback kind of characters. It's sort of like, this guy is fat and slobby. And from that is just a code word. It's just like a code to say, okay, this person is probably slightly untrustworthy. You know, they're kind of like cleanliness is next to holiness. And if you look after your body, if you look after your health, that shows that you're a good person. And you can really tell that. But in a way, it works for this, is because it doesn't matter if you eat healthily or unhealthily. When you die, you'll be brought back and you'll be immortal. So it doesn't matter how you treat your body. It doesn't matter what kind of food you eat. It doesn't matter if you smoke or drink or anything. So it's a purely a character-based thing. So in that way, it works better. But I only sort of realized this after I finished, you know, after I finished reading it, and because I've been thinking about it so far. It's like, oh, why were the characters? Why were these just these shortcuts to the characters? That the fat people were like the bald guy. Oh, you know, the guy who doesn't look after his skin. You know, that kind of guy isn't a good person. But it's not about being good or bad. It's about treating yourself right or not treating yourself right. So it's it's a good book. So, I don't think I've got much to say about it, really. I've gone through... Oh, yeah, and the science and technology, normally I talk about that. It doesn't really come into this book too much at all. You got these cars, which last forever on batteries, so people don't have to, you know, fill the cars up with fuel. But it's really strange that they've had all of these different technologies invented, like everlasting batteries, you know, helicopters that can fly forever. They've got these towers which are 2 kilometers high, lots and lots of different technology, but people don't let this technology affect their lives in any way. They're thinking, no, I can't afford to enjoy this technology. We can't afford to take advantage of this technology. All we need to do is keep advancing technology to the point so in our immortal lives, then we can use the technology, then we can fly to the stars, then we can do this, then we can do that, then we can go on adventures, and then we can do all that kind of stuff. But now we've got to save it. So the use of technology is limited by the society that this pre-utopian dystopia society, which Clifford D. Simek creates there. So That's all I have to say about the book. I'm going to give this book... Actually, I was thinking 3.5 stars, but as I was thinking about it over the last few weeks, it has gone up in my estimations. It was 3.5 stars because it was so short and I wanted more from it in a way. And I wanted a bit more from the story and wanted a bit more from the characters. But I realized, like this review... I read these reviews because it was so long since I read the book that I wanted to sort of... you know, brush up on some of what other people might think about it just so I could remember what I wanted to think about and remember the characters' names and things like that. So yeah, terseness comes from conciseness, not paucity of ideas. And at the beginning, as I was reading it most of the way through, I thought there was a bit of a paucity of plot and a paucity of character. But now thinking about it, I realized that that was just what I was thinking at the time. And Clifford D. Simak was a little bit further ahead of me than I thought he was. So I'm going to give it 4 stars. It's not a life-changing book, and it's not like, and because it is such a short read, I think I wanted it to be a little bit longer, but I'm going to give it 4 stars, and that's it. Read it. Get it on Amazon. It's 29 cents on Amazon. Next time you buy a book, stick this one in there as well. It's worth reading, and you can read it in just like 2 hours or something. You can get through it very quickly. So next book that I'm going to be reviewing will be The Mote in God's Eye by Larry Nivens. And Jerry Pournelle, it's actually Larry Niven, but the narrator of the book gets his name wrong and says it's Larry Nivens and Jerry Pournelle. And I thought it was quite funny that the narrator of the audiobook managed to get the author's name wrong. Who's the actor? David Nivens? I think the Nivens is let me just look on Google here. It's not important at all, but if I type in Nivens, what do I get? Yeah, Larry Niven. And, oh, I thought there was an actor called Nivens. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah, David Nivens. So I got it right. So yeah, I think, oh no, David Niven. Oh, maybe. Okay, someone has to tell me where I'm thinking the name Nivens comes from. Why did this audiobook narrator think it was Nivens? Anyway, that's the wrong book. So I'll read that one. And then Spellright by, I've got the name. Let me open my goodreads.com. Spellright by Blake Charlton. I've got less than 100 pages left to go on that book as well. I'll hopefully review that some of these books over the next 3 or 4 days when I get some more time. But I'm, like I say, I'm very busy at the moment. So if you enjoyed this review, please email me, luke@juggler.net. This is more of a standard review than I do, rather than the last one that I did. A few people emailed me about my review of The Sword of the Lictor by Gene Wolfe, which I attempted to review in the style of the writing of the book. So if anyone was a bit confused about that, if that was your first episode that you've ever listened to, was last episode, I'm very sorry. I'm not going to do that again. So email me, luke@juggler.net, if you want to get in contact about anything or any book recommendations. Another way to recommend books to me or comment on this review is go to goodreads.com/lukebode. You can follow along with my reading. Of the books I'm reading, I'm always commenting about books on goodreads.com as I'm reading them, so you can see my comments as I'm going through before you listen to these reviews. And also I can see what you're reading. For example, I didn't go into it this time because on goodreads.com, Why Call Him Back from Heaven, the average review here is 3.29 stars out of 5. That's from everyone. But friends' reviews, one person, Joshua Gilmore, marked it as 2 read on September the 11th, which I guess he saw me reading it. So, and nobody else has read this book on goodreads.com. So if you have read it, you can go and put a review on there, and I'll see that in the future. Or any other book that you've read, if you just rate it or if you hear that I'm going to read it, if you just rate it or say it's to read or something like that, we can share our interest. I really enjoy looking through other people's reviews and ratings of the book that I review. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge, and also now on Facebook you can it's easier for you to follow me because I'll be publishing some stuff maybe there as well. So if you find me on Facebook, the way that you can just now subscribe to me and you can see updates. Normally on Facebook I'm talking about juggling and things like that. Twitter I use for non-juggling stuff, and Facebook is mostly life and juggling stuff, but you can see what you want there. Otherwise, yeah, check out my website, lukeburge.com/blog, or you can check out my fiction. Oh, there's another little bit of news. I'm going away for the whole of November. All of November I'll be away working on a cruise ship, and there'll be lots and lots of sea days. I'm sailing around the Pacific a lot, and the Pacific is huge, so there'll be lots of tight stretches in a row where I've got 5 days at sea. And because it's November, I'm going to write a novel, or maybe a novel and a half. I'm going to see if I can finish off one novel and then complete another novel for the National Novel Writing Month in the NaNoWriMo 2011. This will be the 4th year in a row that I've given this a go, I think. Yeah, 4 years in a row I've given it a go. So hopefully I can get a final version of one of these books that's been knocking around in my head for ages. So you can check out my fiction at lukeboge.com/fiction and all the other stuff that I do there too. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.